Hi, I'm Hamish from The Story Project, and today I'm talking with Austin Whitaker. Today's date is the 11th of November 2011. We're in Bundaberg recording with The Story Project. And Austin, we're going to talk today about your appreciation and knowledge around the art scene of Bundaberg. So why don't we start back when you were working in the forestry in Brisbane?
Yes, okay. I told you earlier that after I came out of the Air Force in 1946, I was transferred to the Department of Forestry in Brisbane. And the department had about 350 people and had a pretty active social club, or we call it the Forestry Recreation Club. And I joined up and I was a member for quite a while, and eventually I became secretary, and then I became president later on. And we were pretty active in Brisbane, going to all the plays, you know, the comedies and dramas and ballet. There was theatres there that aren't there now, the old Her Majesty's Theatre and the Theatre Royal and the Cremorne Theatre I told you about, behind the Blue Moon Skating Rink. And then the Queensland Art Gallery opened up, I'm not too sure what year, but it was while we were pretty active in the recreation club, so we used to go to openings over there. Their openings are every 3 months or so. Here at Bragg, it's every 5 weeks or so.
And were there any exhibitions or any shows that you saw particularly that stood out?
Oh, I don't have to remember the earlier ones, but when I go to Brisbane, I don't go as much now, but some of the big ones in the last few years have been Picasso and Renoir and, you know, the real original paintings.
So you continue...
I've got those at home, but they're prints. I've got Renoirs and Monets and Prohart and Namatjira, not originals. I'll never be able to afford the originals.
So was there anything that impressed you when you were going to these shows? And
well, I remember what happened. There was a story in the paper. Have you been to the performing art, to the art gallery in Brisbane?
Yes.
You know how the water, that big main floor, they've got water that starts down there and it goes under the floor. And it comes out again and it goes under the floor, and it's level with the water is level with the floor. So on the opening night, there were ladies there in all their finery, you know, their beautiful evening dresses and so on, and standing around having a drink, and some of them, you know, they're talking away, standing here, and they might have moved a bit, and some of them finished up toppling in the water because you just don't see it.
And that would have been in the 70s?
Oh, something like that. I don't remember the date. It's been there a long time.
Yeah.
Since then, the Performing Arts Centre has been built next door to it.
Yeah.
So that sort of... I used to go to other art galleries in Brisbane. There's quite a few down there. Mm. And, I'd be amazed at some of the prices, original prices of well-known artists, or some artists who are not well-known, but their prices are still pretty high.
And were you buying pictures back then?
No, not at all, no. I also got my love of art from my mother. She was one of these art and craft people. Like in the early days, if ladies went out for afternoon tea somewhere, they didn't keep their hands still. They crocheted or knitted or did something. And I've got a lot of my mother's work at home, all that fine crochet work. I've given a lot of it away, but... And then she started on all this arts and craft, you know, making plastic mats and plastic animals and all sorts of things. So she just loved art. Like, I can remember, I was living in Brisbane at the time. I used to come up for the weekend and I'd take her for a drive just down the coast, and she was one of those people. She'd sit in the car and she'd say, "Oh, look at the lovely cloud up there," you know. We'd just take it for granted. Or look at the lovely trees, or the sugar cane, or look at the cows and horses over there. And she could see art and beauty and all those sort of things. Like, you look at the sky sometimes, if you let your imagination go, the clouds, you can see things in the clouds. You can see faces, or you can see animals, or all sorts of things.
And do you feel that appreciation for that art developed when you were going to these galleries and seeing these exhibitions?
Well, probably, yeah, and it was strengthened by the fact that, you know, my mother was interested in art, and my young brother, I was flat out drawing a box myself, but my young brother during the war, I can remember him sitting at the kitchen table. He was a great little sketcher, and he loved the war, battleships and planes, and he'd sit there and he'd draw these battleships and planes, and he'd go boom, boom, bang, 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 you know, he was having his own war, and he, I don't know, 7 or 8 or something like that. I've still got his sketches at home. And my older brother was a bit of an artist. They both learned to play the piano, but my mother, when she took me to the piano teacher, I'm left-handed, and he reckons it's hard to teach a left-hander, which I find a bit hard to believe. But that piano is now over at, do you know, Ferrymead House over the Botanic Gardens?
I'm aware of Ferrymead.
Yeah, well, that Mr. Hickman was the piano teacher. He used to have a studio behind the School of Arts here, and his piano is still over there, a big player piano. So both my brothers could play the piano, but I couldn't.
So there were no standout exhibitions that you remember from when you were younger?
Not in the early days, no.
Yeah. But so when
I was probably amazed, you know, by seeing some of this overseas stuff that, you know, which you never realised existed. You'd heard the names of all those famous paintings, the classics, the masters, you know, from way back. Like people like, it was about to cut his ear off.
Van Gogh.
Van Gogh, yeah. The stories are that they were selling their paintings for a shilling, you know, just to buy another bottle of Plonk. And they'd turn over in their grave if they could see what their paintings are worth these days.
So what's the connection then between that time and Bundaberg?
How do you mean?
So how do we get the story from there through to Bundaberg?
Well, when I retired in 1986, I came back here. My mother died out in 1985. And I told you that I bumped into these friends of mine, Ellen and Keith Widdowson. Keith Widdowson was an accountant down at John Black's department store in Bourbon Street, which was later taken over by David Jones. But he and Ellen were two of the foundation members in the Bundaberg Art Society. And Keith was also one of the trustees of this collection that Dr. Smith gave to the Bundaberg, people of Bundaberg.
So was the Bundaberg Art Society going then, or was it just founded around that time?
Yeah, well, I got a book at home about its history. I'm not too sure. It started some date like 1979.
Right, so around that time.
Yeah, and I'm talking about, I retired 86, and it would have been in the 90s that I bumped into Ellen and Keith. I knew them, but I was at high school with Ellen, and then I'd lost track of them for 30 or 40 years, you know, while I was in Brisbane.
So it had been going for a while before you met them.
Yeah, and I don't know how we started. They must have told me about, you know, they were involved with the Art Society, and I probably told them, oh yes, I used to go to the Art Gallery in Brisbane, and so they asked me to join the Art Society, which I did.
And had the doctor bequested his collection to the Bundaberg Art Society at that stage?
Well, it wasn't the Art Society. It was to the people of Bundaberg, which was the Bundaberg City Council. So they they took it over, and there were three trustees. Keith was one of them. I've still got copies of the documents at home, signed by him and a couple of others. And a lot of the paintings at one stage. You know, you've been into the Civic Centre, have you, in the supper room, the council?
No,
here?
No, I haven't.
Yeah, well, the supper room, a lot of these beautiful paintings of Dr. Smith's used to hang up in the supper room, and they used to have functions in there, people smoking and food, and, you know, the people today are horrified when they think, you know, this beautiful collection was just in there hanging on the wall, people have been putting their dirty fingers on them.
A curator's nightmare.
Food. Yeah, that's right. You're supposed to be handing, you know, everything with gloves.
Right.
And he didn't donate all his collection. He had a son and a daughter. His son became a doctor. Mm. And his doctor was the one, have you heard of the Lukey Quads in Bundaberg? Born years ago, his son was the doctor who brought the Lukey Quads into the world. So he became pretty famous for that.
And what was in his collection that he bequested to the council?
Oh, they were well-known, not famous overseas artist, but well-known Australian artist. He had some Norman Lindsay's, Buckmaster, Sir William Busted, who else? Arthur Boyd. And the story was that he used to, this would have been in the Depression years, and apparently a lot of the local artists, he used to help them, giving them material, you know, paper and brushes and paints, and in return they'd give him a painting, which was a pretty good deal.
So he was quite philanthropically minded.
He was, yeah, he was great. He was a great man. I remember him. He was a Dr. Egmont Schmidt. He was a real German.
S-C-H-M-I-D-T.
You know how Germans used to have their crew cut hair?
Right.
He wouldn't have owned a comb. He used to just go like that. And his hair was just stood up like this. But he always, I can remember him, he always had a white suit on, linen, white pants and a white coat. And a white, I think he had a white tie.
And he was a GP?
He was an ordinary GP, yeah. He was in Lyndon Clinic. It's around here on the corner now. And it was named after Lindenstrasse in Germany. That's a famous street with avenue of trees and so on. And I actually, later on, I researched his life. I've got a portfolio at home of his life, and I was instrumental in getting a plaque unveiled at the Art Centre. Actually, there were four managers around there. I worked under the four managers, and the first one, Stephen Alderton, the permanent collection was in the vault then, and I tried to talk him into doing something about having this Dr. Smith recognised, but he wasn't the slightest bit interested. He just ignored me. So it wasn't until, after Stephen Alderton, there was a Joan Winter, the manager, and then Shelley McClucas came along, and I talked to her about it, and she was interested. So first of all, I wrote a letter to the paper just to tell people what I was going to do. Then I wrote to the council, made the suggestion that, you know, he should be recognised in some form, and they discussed it at a council meeting. It was approved that we'd put a plaque up on the wall with his photo. I had some trouble getting photos of him. And it was unveiled by the mayor. And this Dr. Smith had a daughter named Dorothy. She was there, and Dr. Eric Smith, his son, his family came up from Sydney. And one of the sons is a solicitor or a barrister, he spoke to. But I finished up the photo that we got. This Dr. Smith was president of the North Bundaberg Golf Club. And I remember they've got, around the wall, they've got all the photos of all the early presidents, you know, from the first one probably. And Dr. Smith was in there. So
he was a lover of the arts.
Yeah, and if you have a look on the, if you're around a brag, when you come in the main door, you just look on the wall there. First of all, it shows the history of that building. It was the customs house originally, and then it became the Commonwealth Bank for a long, long time, and then it became the Bundaberg Library before they built this library over here. And then in 1996, like, they built that library, so in 1996 it became the Bundaberg Arts Centre.
And was one of the reasons why it became the regional art gallery was because they had this collection from...
Oh, that was the start of it all, but I think there were a lot of people, a lot of artists in Bundaberg who thought we should have something like this, you know, where they could display their own paintings, and they would have known about art galleries in, I don't know, it's a place like Rockhampton or Townsville, they would have had them before us. So these people were aware of all that, and They just wanted, you know, the thought that we should have an art centre too.
Do you think Bundaberg had a highly developed appreciation for the artists around?
Oh, that's a hard question to answer. Like, even today, I often say to them, you want to walk down the post office corner with a clipboard and ask people, where the Bundaberg Art Centre is. You know, a lot of people wouldn't know. And this word brag, they laugh at me. I don't like it. Like if I ask you what does brag mean, that means you're based, doesn't you? Boasting. Now, other galleries like Brisbane and Sydney and Melbourne, Sydney's the Art Gallery of New South Wales. And in London there's the Tate Gallery. And in New York there's the Guggenheim Gallery. But this word brag...
You think it's a bit brash.
Oh, it is. And also if you look at the... They advertise in the paper a lot. The News Mail give them a free column. And the way they've done printed this word brag, it's B-R-A and the G is in a deep purple. Now, in the paper, you've got to look pretty hard to see that G. So all you see is bra, B-R-A. So I joke when I go around.
A lingerie shop.
Yeah, you know, when James sees the administration officer around there, I often go in there and I say, oh, I think I'll have a size 36 double D, please. You know, and they go crook because I'm making fun of the... I still call it the Bundaberg Art Centre. I don't like that word brag.
So, among the collection, what are some of your favourite works?
Well, I like... Because I'm an old traditionalist, and because I worked in the Department of Forestry, I just love the bush, anything to do with the bush, mountains, rivers, streams, coastal areas. And there's some absolutely magnificent old scenes of Sydney and other country scenes. He does have some portraits too. I like portraits. I'm afraid I don't like modern art or abstract art. I mean, some people do. Like, you know how the Archibald Prize in Sydney, that's portraits, but then there's the Douglas Moran art exhibition, and the first prize about $50,000, and sometimes you'll see the winner. It's a huge painting, just all white, and it might have red, white and blue line down there and red, white and blue line across there. And I can do that, and that wins the prize.
So are there many paintings in the collection which reflect Bundaberg's kind of heritage?
They've done, since Dr. Smith gave this collection, they've encouraged local people. Like I tell you, I'm on the acquisition committee. We meet two or three times a year. And they encourage local people to either donate a painting or they can put a price on it, and you know, 200, 500, 1,000 or whatever. At the last meeting there was some there for 3,000 and our total allocation's only $5,000, so we can't consider a 3,000. We could. In fact, I often say at the meetings, instead of buying 3, 4, 5 pieces, I'd like to spend the 5,000 on one painting. I mean even for 5,000 you're not going to get the best painting in the world. But even then there'd be arguments, you know, amongst this group in the committee. I'd tell them I'm the devil's advocate, you know, they want to recommend something and I'll recommend against it because I'm old-fashioned and traditionalist. I don't like abstract and modern art. But they say you've got to cater. I say to them, do you cater for the majority or the minority? Well, they say you've got to cater for everybody, which I suppose is fair enough. And the other thing I say to them is that this is Bundaberg. We're just a regional gallery. It's not Sydney, Melbourne, Paris, New York, London. So you should cater for the people in Bundaberg. And I know from being in the Bundaberg Art Society what people's loves are. There are some in our art society who do like abstract and modern art, but they're in the very small minority.
So... You sound like you feel it's your role to remind people that, you know, not to get too lofty about this.
Yeah, well, you know, that's just me. Perhaps I'm being selfish, but because of my age, I can throw my weight around. I don't care whether they like it or not.
So tell me about your own collection.
Well, I started, then I got involved through Alan and Keith. That was the Bundaberg Arts Society. Then I got involved with the Bundaberg Arts Festival every year. That's here in the Civic Centre. It's a pretty big, it's one of the biggest regional festivals in Queensland. We get applications from all around Australia, even occasionally from overseas. We had a couple from South Africa one year. And I was finished up being secretary, and treasurer and coordinator of that for a couple of years. I pulled out a couple of years ago. But because of that, I used to buy, I've got the list here, I haven't showed you yet. I started buying, my first painting was 1996 from the, and at that time they weren't in the Civic Centre, they were down another building right down the end of Baldwin Street. So my first painting was 1996, and it was a bushfire because I worked in forestry and I knew all about fires in the bush. And then each year, I've got them listed here, I'd buy one or two, and I've got over $7,000 worth of paintings, and I've seen the sales book. I'm the largest purchaser from the Arts Festival. I stopped a couple of years ago, so I'm just ran out of space. I've got paintings around the wall, and sometimes I'll take one down and put it on the floor and take that one up and put it back up there. So, and I've got a two-storey home. I've got them in every room, even in the toilets, the bathroom, the storeroom, just somewhere I can find a space.
And what are you going to do with these when you pass away?
That's a good question. I tell people, ask me that all the time, and I say, I've got a shipping container ordered, and it's going with me, either up there or down there. But, you know, I've got nieces and nephews, they'll take some, but it worries me when I'll be dead. I shouldn't be worrying about it, but there'll be a sale, I suppose, and people come along, offer $10 or $20 or something. I've paid $500, $600, $700, $800 is about the most I've ever paid, I think. But you know, I go to sales myself. Apart from paintings, we used to get my mother, myself, and my two brothers. She loved glassware, china and porcelain. We used to give her something good for a birthday, Christmas and Mother's Day. We've got all that at home now. Well, I say to people, human beings die, but antiques don't die. Like you look at that antique show in Britain. I watch that on TV, and the experts say, oh, yeah, this vase was 1620 and it was made in Lancaster or somewhere, and it still looks brand new and it'll go on forever.
So do you think there are many patrons of the arts around Bundaberg who are trying to foster a sense of local identity?
Oh, yeah, there are some. There are those who do a lot of talking. But
so Dr. Schmidt was obviously
He was a real philanthropist.
Because I guess in a town like Bundaberg, you don't have a sense of the money that you would in a town like Toowoomba,
yeah,
for
that's
instance.
Right. See, we can't, at this acquisition committee, we can only afford to buy something pretty cheap.
And you don't have the wealthy families and the scale that you would have, say, in the Darling Downs.
No, that's right. Well, some of those big, like in Melbourne, I think the Myers and a few other people, they don't donate $20,000. It's $1 million, $2 million, $5 million. Mm. Well, they'll buy, there's a painting that'll be on sale in London for a couple of $1 million, or they'll buy it and then present it to the Victorian Art Gallery or whatever. And I think those big galleries, the Tate Gallery in London and some of those big ones, say even Paris and everywhere, they'd have people, wealthy people who are donating all the time.
Do you think Bundaberg punches above its weight with this stuff though?
Probably not. Because, you know, we boast, we've got 80, since amalgamation, Bundaberg, before amalgamation, we used to say the city of Bundaberg was about 48,000 population. On the map, it was just a square. But since amalgamation, Bundaberg's taken over Isis, Gingin, South Kalam, all the Bargara, the old Bernardshire Council. So our population's now quoted at about 86,000 or something like that. But at some of the openings around at Bragg here, I shouldn't say Bragg, Bundaberg Arts Centre, we're lucky to get 50 or 60 people. And it, you know, it depends what the exhibition is. You'll see people there at one exhibition, you never see them again. They only come because they know, you know, they're interested in what it's advertised in the paper, and they're interested in what that exhibition's about. The one exhibition we do get a crowd in is it's on at the moment, the skills, combined skills exhibition. You would have seen it there now. That takes in about 8 high schools around Bundaberg, and they're just trying to encourage the students to become interested in art. Well, all of those who exhibit, maybe only 1 or 2 eventually, you know, keep on to art. But when I was on the installation crew, we used to hate hanging that exhibition because some of the kids would have modules that come hang from the ceiling. They've got to be, this one's got to be there and this one's got to be here. And you can spend half an hour just on one installation. I'd rather just hang paintings. Now they have those crazy things like paint up an old chair, all kaleidoscopic colours, and stick spoons on it, and knives, and old shoes, and that's all art. And at the opening night, all the parents are there, and grandparents, and the kids, so it's pretty crowded. But a lot of those, you never see them again at another exhibition.
So there's not a sense of continuing on the legacy of appreciation here.
No, I think it's sad when we, you know, the population that we've got, that we only get, you know, don't get big. Of course, that's only opening night. They do come in, it's open for 5 or 6 weeks, and there are people who come in every day after that, but you don't get hundreds. You might get lucky if you got 20 today and 25 tomorrow.
Who would be the prominent artists who reflect the Bundaberg, you know, it's something from Bundaberg?
Oh, we've got some, I shouldn't mention names, but we've got some good artists who used to belong to the Bundaberg Art Society, but then they thought they got too good for the Bundaberg Art Society and they resigned, they pulled out. Do you want me to mention names or better not?
It's your call.
Better not.
So there's a sense of artists wanting to sort of
flee the coop. There's some of them who think they're up there.
Right.
And we're just the hoi polloi down here.
Right.
And one in particular, I won't mention his name. I talked to you about the Bundaberg Arts Festival, that we have sponsors. There are about 29 sections, and the section one is sponsored by Bundaberg Sugar. And the first prize is $5,000. And then the next prize is about $2,500, and it ranges right down to the end, about $100. It's not just art, it's ceramics and photography and statues, but mainly visual art. Plus, there's a section for tapestries. But this fellow I'm talking about, he entered something in Alan Powell Ford. That's a big Ford place here in Bundaberg, down the bottom of the street. It's changed names since then, but he was one of our sponsors. And this thing that this fellow painted was huge. And we bring judges up from the south, and it's the judge who picks all these winners, and then he goes away, and we people on the committee have to face all the complaints, you know, the next couple of weeks, or why did he give that a prize?
So you're the ones that actually announce the decision that he's made.
Yeah, well, there's an opening night, and they start off at the lowest, like section 29, $100, and it goes right up and builds up and crescendo to the section one. Everyone's waiting. Section one is so and so, and what we do, it's taken off the wall and it's given a special spot near the front door, the spotlight on it. But some of them have been absolutely crazy, you know.
Very unpopular.
Oh, terrible, terrible things. But this fellow I was talking about, Alan Powell Ford, when they got it, they pulled out their sponsorship, and the story is they took the painting out to the dump. You know, that's the story. I don't know if it's true or not. And then there was another sponsor, Baker, Bryan and Tull. They're solicitors in Bundaberg. Now, if you go to a solicitor office, you want to see something nice, you know, staid painting, nice scene out in the bush or whatever, or portrait. But in 2 years running, the judge gave this, I won't mention this fellow's name, but he paints, he's a bit childish. He makes collages out of little dolls and things. Now, there's a frame, And there's all these little dolls stuck in and funny buttons and funny things. And 2 years running, the judge gave that prize to Baker, Brian and Tull, so they pulled out too.
Would it be fair, though, to say that the approach that artists might have might be quite at odds with the conservatism of the people here?
Well, it is. Like I say to people, we're all individuals. We're all... what I like, you don't like, and vice versa. If we all liked the same thing, we'd have to be robots, wouldn't we?
Hmm.
You know, you wouldn't be a human being. If we all said, oh yes, I like that, I like that, I like that. But that's the beauty of being an individual. You make up your own mind.
But don't forget, like it or not. But surely artists, also part of their job is to push new ground. Instead of repeating the same ground, is to push new ground and look at new ways of interpreting things.
Well, they do. Like I got a good friend, Fred Green, who's been painting in watercolours for a long time. And a couple of years ago, he changed over to oils completely. And others will... there's another lady who used to paint watercolours, and now she paints on silk. She has frames made. You've got to put the silk on and stretch it out real tight. And I've got two of her paintings at home. And they look lovely, you know, paint animals or flowers or whatever. But, I say to people, like, you'll hear artists talking, oh, yes, I love that because of the light and the shade and this feature and that feature. I say to people, if I go to an art gallery, my philosophy is, would I like to see that painting hanging on my wall? That's how I judge it. And I don't care about light and shade and colours and black and whites and frames. I just say, would I like that hanging on my wall? That's my philosophy.
So how many people are involved in Bragg?
What do you mean, the staff or...? There's 10 on the staff around there.
There's 10 on the staff, and there's also...
I wonder what they all do.
And then there's also a committee, is there?
Yeah, well, there's different committees.
Yeah.
I was on the original, as I said, it was open on the 9th of March 1996, and I got involved a couple of years after that, and I was on the original volunteers committee, like mm-hmm. we were all volunteers apart from the paid staff. And then I used to help because I told them I had love of English, and I in my job in Forest in Brisbane, I was always a good proofreader. Like, you can put something in front of me, and if there's a mistake there, it just hits me in the eye. So I did a lot of proofreading for them.
Mm.
And then I helped with the original. They brought out a volunteer's manual about this thick, you know, what volunteers should do right from A to Z. And so I was involved with that. And then I became, got on the installation crew. We pulled the old exhibition down. Like what happens on a Sunday afternoon, the gallery would close at 3 o'clock, and then it'd be closed Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday. So on the Monday, we'd have to pull the old exhibition down, pack it up in the crates that came, if it came from the south, put up the new one, and then Wednesday night was the official opening for that next exhibition. And I was also on the reception desk of a weekend. People coming in, you know, you'd tell them about what the exhibition was, and you could sign them up. They'd have workshops, especially when the school holidays are on. Up there on that access studio, you were in the artists and residence with access studios outside there. All the mothers bring their kids for all sorts of things, making stuff out of ice cream cones and tins and, you know, anything at all to do with art, sticking things on. Just young kids, you know, just getting them involved in art.
So how long were you a volunteer for?
12, 13, 14 years.
Yeah.
I say with 12 odd years there and about 13 or 14 years at the Arts Festival and also 10 years or so with the Arts Society, which I'm still in, hanging in the School of Arts, I've got a combined about 35 years, you know, of being involved in the arts.
Mm.
And then apart from that, I told you I write to the Newsmail. I had 2 columns, and I do reviews of, I've been doing this for over 10 years, reviews of I haven't done any lately, but if there was an exhibition on at the art centre which I liked, I'd write up a story about it and try to encourage people, you know, try and get them interested to come along and have a look at it.
Mm.
And I also did reviews of concerts. I always got involved with the Bundaberg Symphony Orchestra. This Ellen, the husband of Keith Whittison, she's one of the first violins in the Bundaberg Arts Festival, except she had to pull out this year because she had to have a shoulder replacement and she can't lift her arm. I'm 80, nearly 86, but she's 85 and a half. I always joke that she's only a baby because I'm 3 months older than her.
Do you think or do you see that culture, the arts, you know, an appreciation for the arts and a vibrant art culture is largely something that's down south?
Well, certainly, yes. Yeah, it's down south and overseas because of a bigger population and more money available. But even, like saying that, like places like Childers and Gingin, they've got, since Bragg was formed, they've taken responsibility now for Childers and Gingin, and they have their own exhibitions. Local artists, we go and look at them. Some of them, to me, are pretty amateurish, but then you'll see some good ones too. You'll see the whole range of very ordinary, and this is just my opinion, you know, very ordinary up to very good. So I think every little town, like even when I was in Forestry, I used to go around the countryside or leaving, there was always somebody in the town, like in the pubs, there was always a bloke who wrote poetry. Now he'd be drinking all day, but he'd write poetry about the locals and really good stuff, you know, mention all the names, this fellow's got the cattle out there and the grain this way. And so in every town you've got these people who have got some arty background. And even those smaller towns have their exhibitions, just to encourage. It's really a social event, you know, people come along, have their cakes and wines and meet up probably any time that they meet. Now meet people coming from the country and just a meeting place.
Mm.
We've had Aboriginal exhibitions around there, and in the School of Arts we've hung Kiwi stuff from New Zealand. We've hung quite a few Aboriginal exhibitions.
Mm.
And the tapestries and photographic stuff, you know, anything at all.
Mm.
Like the word art, I say it's only three letters, A-R-T,
mm.
but it covers a multitude of things. Like even a chair, like people design a chair, that's a work of art, you know, try to make that chair look better than what it is. I saw on TV a few nights ago, they were showing these people who draw these concept cars, you know, how they're trying to design cars for the future. So they start off with a very rough drawing, gets better and better and better. Then they'll build this concept car, put it on a showroom, and it's either accepted or not accepted. So, I mean, there's art in everything. Like even one of the our Art Society fellows, all he paints is dead trees and stumps. You know, to you might walk out in the bush and see that old stump and it doesn't affect you at all, but to an artist who appreciates that, he can bring it to life. He can paint it as though it's there, real.
Mm.
And there's another artist we've got, Betsy Blair. She's a good art sketcher. She goes uptown. She doesn't do it now, she's sick, but she used to go uptown, buy a cup of coffee at a shop and sit there with a sketch pad and just sketch people walking past, you know, real fast, and go home and paint it. He's even got some poor old fella came along with a colostomy bag on his leg. And if I had a colostomy bag, I'd be wearing long trousers. He had shorts on, so the sketch he did, this poor old fella, he doesn't know he's being sketched. She's got this fella with a colostomy bag. But her name is Betsy Blair. She was great.
Yeah, yeah.
I keep going. We never
no,
out
I think I think we've about reached yeah. our time. Shall we?
Yeah,
finish?
That's the beauty of the Art Society. There are people who paint, you know, in different media. Mm. Some use charcoal, some use crayon,
mm.
Some use wax, you know, but you know, salon, but you know about Batik painting, do you? Batik. That's done with a little gadget from the back with hot wax. I've got one of those at home, beautiful flowers and stuff.
Okay, Austin, thank you very much for sharing that. Yeah.
I hope it was
I think it's a good, it's an important document on the art world here.